I get the views of Tony Gosling at least once a month because he's a top man. The host of the politics show on BCFM in Bristol. It's a fantastic program. It really is. Can't say enough about it. He's in Devon today. Would have joined us earlier on in the week, but I had a few technical issues, as you know. Great to be back today, and great to be speaking with our friend Tony Gosling. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Hi, Richie. Thanks for inviting me back on again.
Love having you on. I don't know where we should start today. You and I are advocates, proponents of free speech. We probably don't like the things that Rachel Riley is saying and doing, the Countdown host, but she should have the right to say them, Tony, shouldn't she?
Well, look, I think the problem we've got is that we've had over the last 30, 40 years a concentration of news into fewer and fewer hands, fewer and fewer editors, fewer and fewer newsrooms. I mean, even on a very basic level in the UK, you've seen the ITV networks go from producing their own local documentaries all around the country to now less and less. So, I mean, for example, here in the West Country where I am, just a few years ago, they closed the whole news operation in Devon and Cornwall around Plymouth, and it's all based in Bristol. So, okay, so they have, you know, reporters down here, but there's getting who controls what we see and hear, particularly in broadcasting? Is it just in fewer and fewer hands? So it's much easier to have what they call groupthink. You know, so on a particular story, you'll find just one view, and that's it. And that's what you're supposed to believe. And that is not journalism. Journalism is interrogating the facts and coming up with a view which does challenge what the establishment media is saying.
Brilliant stuff, Tony. This is the binary choice tactic or the false dilemma. You're absolutely right. Just quickly, I want to talk about Andrew. You didn't answer the question. I love having you on because you didn't answer the bloody question, and I know why you didn't. Listen, I find Riley to be repugnant. I find her to be a hysterical fishwife because I don't believe that anti-Semitism is endemic in our society today. I genuinely don't believe that. However, if she wants to think that Jeremy Corbyn is anti-Semitic, we should take her to the cleaners in debate. We should not be advocating that she's fired. Do you agree
or
not?
I think Boris Johnson is anti-Semitic. I saw his speech at the United Nations in front of the world where he's invoking the myth of Prometheus. Now, the myth of Prometheus is directly countering the whole Old Testament idea of the Garden of Eden is saying basically the opposite, you know, that the Bible got it wrong and God was being really vindictive when he punished Adam and Eve. And actually, you know, Adam and Eve did the right thing. So, I mean, what he's doing there is he's subtly undermining the whole idea of the Old Testament, and he's hoping that nobody will notice. Also, my experience is within the Conservative Party, there is much more anti-Semitism, right-wing talk and thinking than there is in the Labour Party. This is sort of, you know, chatting to Tory members in, you know, local Conservative clubs, which I do from time to time. You know, I actually have found, you know, really anti-Semitic. I'm not going to name names about specific Conservative associations, but some saying, oh, you know, the Jews, we've got to, you know, this is what's really the problem, blah, blah. And, you know, I sit there and my eyes will roll around and I just think, well, and actually usually just try and get out of the place. I don't want to be around people who are saying those things. I've never seen that going on in the Labour Party at all. And of course, this is really all just about Israel and trying to stifle criticism of Israel, because Jeremy Corbyn is being very pro-Palestinian. He's being critical of the Israeli state. We know that there isn't any proper democracy going on there at the moment. They've had they're coming on for their third election in the space of just 8 to 9 months. And the army is running the show. So effectively, you've got military rule in Israel and the Palestinians living in a kind of a ghetto. So Corbyn is one of the only people who's saying anything of any sense. But of course, he's being smeared as, oh, well, you know, he's anti-Semitic. He hates all Jews. Of course, he doesn't. Absolute nonsense and rubbish. He's been a campaigner for anti-racism the whole of his life. Absolutely. And as almost all people I've ever met in the Labour Party have. So if this is just a smear, and it only gets any traction because the mass media just pushes it because they want a bit of clickbait. And actually, maybe they are actually themselves, as corporations, more sympathetic with the Israeli view than the Palestinian view. And maybe actually it's the mass media that's racist and anti-Semitic.
It might very well be. I don't see I don't see Riley as being part of any sinister Hasbro plot. I see her as somebody who's just wrong. I'll give you one more chance. You don't have to answer. I'll give you one more chance to answer. We should not be calling for people to be fired because we disagree with them, because that only ends terribly, doesn't it?
Well, this is what's happened over the last, 30, 40 years. There's lots of changes have happened in the media where if you own a media company, even these days the BBC, which is virtually owned by the City of London, if you look at all the top executives, many of them, I mean, for example, the chairs have come from City of London banks. What they want is they want a whole corporation that just echoes the views of the people who are the executive running it. They have all these managers. You know what? I'd like to see every single manager at the BBC do something on air, on camera, so we can see who these people are, because they're trying to manipulate things behind the scenes and they never actually expose themselves to any kind of scrutiny by the viewers and the listeners. I mean, particularly in radio, there's no excuse for anybody, even a manager of a radio station, not to have his own show playing old music or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, this is what they're doing nowadays, is they're a whole load of bureaucrats and managers behind the scenes trying to just make sure that the only views that are promulgated by a particular outlet, network or whatever, echo the owners of that outlet. And that's just not journalism. It's not interrogative journalism, which is what I love and I try and do all the time.
Yeah, it's what you've done for years, my friend. I'll give you that. Tony Gosling is our guest. The BCFM, The Politics Show, is a must listen every week. It really is. Check out thisweek.org.uk. 26 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Lisa Bloom representing some of Jeffrey Epstein's victims. She's demanding they're demanding that he cooperates with the authorities in the US. We've all seen the extraordinarily bizarre interview with BBC Newsnight last week. I took from the interview that he was lying profusely, and I believe that he knows. I know I don't have to be Einstein, but I believe that he knows more about the things that Epstein was up to than maybe he would want us to know. You wrote a brilliantly challenging piece on this in the week. You take a different view of what happened in that interview
I think you're probably right. He was lying on that. But I mean, we don't know. I would suggest what's happened here is Andrew has been advised. Okay. So, I mean, when I first saw that Epstein had died in jail, my immediate thoughts are, well, that's handy for Andrew.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that the royal family is involved in his death, but certainly Andrew was due to be sucked into this live case in the US, and Epstein died. So it isn't entirely impossible. The royal family used one of my either intelligence services or whoever, MI6, somebody like that. I mean, isn't it licensed to kill to get rid of this guy who could drag the royal family into this scandal? So that, I mean, that's feasible. But ultimately, the thing which I think as most people have pointed to or looked at is these pictures of Andrew and Epstein together. And I haven't seen anybody really explaining or interrogating why is Andrew and Epstein walking around in the middle of Central Park. Now, this is after Epstein's original case, where he got a year in jail. I mean, if anyone hasn't seen it, the ABC America Australian documentary, 60 Minutes, it's called Exposing Jeffrey Epstein's International Sex Trafficking Ring. I mean, and Andrew is featured in that, but it's the whole documentary is focused on what was Epstein actually up to, and Ghislaine Maxwell, what were they doing? Because these were the real criminals. Anyway, so Epstein goes to jail. Although he's allowed out, I think it was like 6 days a week. He can just go out and in his office and actually possibly even be interacting with young women at the same time. But anyway, that's not the point. The point really is what was actually going on in the park. So I would suggest that Andrew had seen that that Epstein was going through this court case in the US and had gone over afterwards to find out. Look, I mean, I've been with girls in your places, and you're now on trial, or whatever. You've had your court case. I want to know, do you have any pictures of me. I mean, you know, what's going on? You know, he's obviously nervous that he might be dragged into something. So he's gone over there. Now, I would suggest, when we've seen, anyone that's had a look at this closely enough will see that in his New York mansion, Epstein had every single room camered up.
Yeah.
So there was a special little room with loads of CCTV screens in it, and everything was took place in there as being filmed. Where, obviously must have been a lot of film of Prince Andrew. Whether he knew this at the time when he went onto the television to do the interview, I don't know. But I would suggest someone somewhere has quite a lot of footage of Prince Andrew.
Here's the question, Tony. Sorry to interrupt you. Here's the question, because this is really important. Tony, why would anybody want information on him? Because he's pretty useless as an individual. Or would it be to blackmail people associated with him? So he's not up to much politically, but his family, of course, are all powerful. His mother. I wonder, would that be the reason they might have wanted to entrap him?
Okay, well, look, these blackmail operations are, which Epstein was running, many people suggesting for the Israeli intelligence services. I mean, it was certainly amazing the mysterious, massive amounts of money he got from somewhere. That was part of a pattern which has been going on for many, many years. I mean, you go back to the Franklin scandal, for example. This isn't really, I think the thing to understand about it is it's nothing to do with people who have a penchant for underage sex with underage boys and girls. Is actually a blackmail operation, and that's the whole purpose of it. You know, the Franklin scandal back in 1988, which where children were being taken from a US I don't know what they call them over there, but I think it's an elementary school, junior school. 1987, the Finders cult in Virginia, where children were involved in that as well. And in 1981, Sir Peter Hayman, who was the deputy head of MI6 in Britain, he was shown to have a load of images of and believed to have been molesting young boys. And then, of course, we had the Kinkora boys home scandal in Northern Ireland between the 1950s and the 1970s, which certainly appears to have been a British intelligence operation to blackmail people in Northern Ireland for whatever reason. But this is a normal thing. In fact, there's a great article on the Consortium News website which just goes through some of these. This is what the intelligence services do in order to blackmail people. Now, Andrew, you're quite right. He's a bit of a twit. Why would anyone want to blackmail him? But, of course, this is all about having leverage into the head of state of any country. Andrew is... He's the second son of the Queen, and he has an enormous amount of influence because of that position. Now, what we've got is we've got an aging Queen she could die sometime fairly soon. I mean, she's getting on. She's in her mid-90s now. And when it comes to Prince Charles taking over, I mean, there's going to be a bit of a, I mean, it may not be an enormous argy-bargy, but there will be a debate, because there's a lot of people in the UK are saying, well, actually, maybe it's a skip a generation and William should take over. There's quite a lot of feeling in the country that Charles and Camilla aren't, you know, appropriate. And that there may be also that sort of feeling in the establishment. So this gives an enormous amount of leverage to Prince Andrew in that sort of situation. So the succession, you know, back in, you know, medieval times, yeah, people would be just simply fall out of the top of a castle or something, or be drowned in the moat or something, or whatever. Yeah, nowadays, it's a character assassination that happens. So I think that's essentially what's happened here is Andrew, as someone who has, you know, enormous leverage within the British state, because of his position in the royal family, has just simply been spun out. I mean, he's had sex with a 17-year-old girl, which is actually not, it's a minor offence. His real offence, as one of my colleagues was pointing out to me, is aiding arms sales to Saudi Arabia. This is the sort of thing he should be hauled over the coals for, not this Epstein scandal. And it really should be Ghislaine Maxwell, who apparently now is hiding out in Brazil, who's in the spotlight, not Andrew. I think it's fair to say that both Virginia Giuffre, or however you pronounce it, and Prince Andrew are both victims of this sting operation. And I'm quite surprised to see... I mean, the real disaster, of course, was Andrew actually going on on screen, because he shouldn't be doing that. And now he's nailed his colours to the mast. At some point in the future, maybe these pictures will come out of him in there, and, you know, he will be made to look a complete idiot. But he's been very badly advised, and possibly deliberately, in order to blacken his name. So, you know, he should have, I suppose, been a little bit more wiser to the event, and, you know, understood that maybe, as a single man, and maybe a little vulnerable to a honey trap, that he shouldn't walk straight into it.
Right, I'm not having any
which
of this.
He appears to have done.
I'm not having this is Tony Gosling, by the way, terrific journalist, great friend of mine. I'm not having any of this. This is why I love having Tony on. Tony, he spent so much time in Epstein's company. How can we credibly be asked to entertain the idea that he didn't see Epstein with girls that were under the age? I accept the point you made about Virginia Roberts, Jeffrey or Jufrey, whoever you pronounce it, as you said. I accept that. 17. Okay, she was under the age of consent in Florida. It's not good. It's a crime. She wasn't 12 or 13 or 14. I hear that. I'm not happy about it, but I hear that. How could we be expected to believe that he did not know what was going on? Remember, Royal Protection Officers, you and I have talked about how could Prince Charles not know what Jimmy Savile was up to. I can't buy for a minute that this guy Andrew didn't know or didn't see Epstein around very young girls. Back to you.
Yes, I'm sure he did, but I think he imagined that this was never going to come out, because Epstein was being protected. We know that. Ghislaine Maxwell was being protected. I mean, when Epstein was charged, I can't remember the name of the US person in the US government who was in charge of this prosecution, but he was told, well, it's hands off. This is just intelligence parlance for, well, this is an intelligence operation, and the courts are not going to get involved. And I think that's what Andrew understood, was that the whole Epstein operation was above the law, and he wasn't going to have to worry about any sort of things that happened to do with Epstein.
You were talking about you were talking about Acosta. I think Acosta there did that to you. But hang on a second. Let me just pull you back. Let me pull you up on something. If he saw Epstein with underage girls and thought to himself, ah, well, Epstein is above the law, he's worse than Jeffrey Epstein. I've said this my entire life. As somebody who was, listen, before you jump back in, I'm not virtue signaling here. I was never subjected to sexual abuse. Never. I wasn't. I was very lucky. But I was subjected to the most appalling physical abuse. And when I was going through the catharsis, Tony, when I was coming to terms in my late teens, early 20s, with the things that happened to me, do you know who I blamed worse than the people who inflicted the physical abuse on me? The bastards who knew but didn't do anything. What sort of cretin, what sort of creature is Prince Andrew if he was spending time with this guy, knowing that this guy was abusing trafficked girls? He's the worst of the worst, isn't he?
Well, I'm afraid that's human nature. Often people, when they see something awful happening, turn and walk away. But the perpetrators certainly need to be brought to justice. We've got Jean-Luc Brunel, who was one of those who was procuring girls for Ghislaine Maxwell, and Ghislaine Maxwell herself. These people have to be brought to justice. It's no good for them to hide out in far-right fascist Brazil on holiday, effectively, whilst this storm blows over and they're forgotten about. I mean, remember, I mean, they're connected with the top people in the world, Richie. I mean, Jeffrey Epstein was chums and friends with, and Ghislaine Maxwell were, with Jeff Bezos, the boss of Amazon, for example, his chum. They used to go along to various of these big top-level Amazon love-in meetings of various sorts. His island was right next to Richard Branson's island, apparently, where people like Stephen Hawking are going over there. And yet, none of these people seem to have been the focus of attention as much as Andrew. Now, I can understand, obviously, Andrew as a royal is going to get that attention. But we need to, I think, look at this wider operation that's been going on, which is quite clearly a major blackmail operation, which was above the law. Epstein able to go backwards and forwards to the UK. Ghislaine Maxwell being able to apparently travel wherever she wants to. And I would imagine that they're not the only people who have this high, you know, this level of, basically get out of jail free cards in their back pocket. Wherever they go, whatever they do, they don't seem to ever get prosecuted. And I think you know, one of the things that I find so appalling about all of this is the people who have now pulled away from Andrew are, well, I know there are various groups that have dropped him. One, of course, is KPMG, those wonderful auditors behind the auditing of the banks such as RBS, which caused the 2008 crash. These people have now dropped Andrew, apparently. They are appalling people themselves. Andrew should have dropped them, for goodness sake, and also Standard Chartered Bank. So we're talking about big, powerful people in the City of London saying, oh, we no longer want anything to do with Andrew. And I'm not for a minute defending what he's done. I think he's been an absolute fool. But as far as I can see, he's been absolutely hung out to dry by the establishment in this case and by the press. And also, I would suggest, you know, as I said, people inside his own office deliberately shoving him in front of the cameras so that he can be pilloried.
Yeah, there was no good to come from that interview. I do agree with that. Jean Anne Crowley is a very good friend of mine, very smart journalist herself. Jean Anne says maybe the Queen is smarter than she's given credit for. Quite Machiavellian, really, knowing that when he did the interview, he would hang himself out to dry, basically. And once that interview had aired, he put himself out there, hence the open season on his path, and the irritated royal photographer started looking through the pics of old Randy Andy. So Jean Anne taking the point of view that it's a bit of smart business by the monarch.
One of Epstein's business partners, hardly anyone has been talking about, Ehud Barak, former Israeli leader, a company called SumEB, S-U-M-E-B. Absolutely, you know, this guy was very much in touch with some very serious, you know, high level people. Another thing I'd like to say, Richie, which is, I mean, we've seen everywhere paedophile, this word used. Actually, I'm not sure that's the appropriate word to use about Epstein. You know, we're talking here about young boys and girls, so I don't know about boys, but certainly girls, over the age of puberty. So we're talking about 12 to 16 year olds. This is certainly child sexual abuse, but paedophilia is, technically speaking, I don't want to be too, you know, sort of absolutely, you know, 100% about this, but it's like, this is about under, children below the age of puberty is paedophilia, and as I understand it, this was not the type of person that Epstein was procuring at all. So this term paedophile seems to be used now wrongly.
Why do you think that is? Because
just before
my audience goes for you, because they will do. No, because they will. Well, you know, you've been around a long time. People hear what they want to hear. Tony Gosling is not saying that it's not so bad if you rape a 13 or a 14 year old girl. He's not saying that. I know you're not saying that. You're making a point. Why do you think it is? Is there something going on? Is there a reason why that's happening, that they are equating?
Well, I just think it's bad journalism. I think, you know, that's not a term that should be used to refer to, you know, to...
But it is just as bad,
sex with post-pubescent youngsters. You know, it's actually pre-pubescent, which is paedophiles. And, you know, that is a whole... I mean, it's a worse offence, I think it's fair to say, you know.
I don't agree. I don't agree that it is.
I mean, particularly to do with, you know, trading, selling photographs of, you know, that sort of thing. You know, I think even I'm quite sure the police will treat them differently. You know, it's a worse offence, and it should be treated as a worse offence. But the Epstein didn't really, as far as I can see, fall into that paedophile category.
Do you know what? I don't agree that it's a worse offence. We have age of consent for a reason. If a 13 or 14 year old girl is taken out of her home and brought to an island or brought to a house for the subject of being abused, for me it's just as bad.
I mean, in some countries you can marry someone. Hey,
I lived in Spain for years where until recently the age of consent was 13, but I found that to be, I'm not puritanical, but I found that to be outrageous. I don't think 14 year old girls should be having sex. I don't think 15-year-olds should have. But you know what? I'm silly because I know that 15-year-old boys and girls will have sex together. But that's okay. They're 15-year-old boys and girls. But a grown man to be with a 14-year-old girl, it's rape, Tony, in my opinion.
Well, I don't think there should be sex before marriage in an ideal world, but then that's, you know, that's an old-fashioned view probably. Look, another aspect of the Epstein case, though, is this, all this dodgy mystery money that kept appearing. I mean, you know, I mentioned the links to the Israeli state through Ehud Barak, but I mean, that is also, that's certainly, that money is still sitting in a bank account, and it should be investigated. It's like, well, now he's dead, no more investigation is happening.
Yeah.
Ghislaine Maxwell's disappeared off the scene. This is no longer going to be investigated. And all that's going to happen is that some of those people who were sucked in the sort of whirlpool spiral of glamour. You know, remember, you've got your Stephen Hawking's and people like this, you know, top level scientists were on that island, on Epstein's island. How come they aren't being hung out to dry too? I just think we need to have this, a bit better interrogated than what I've seen so far, which is just really an excuse to smear Andrew and to completely spin him out of any kind of power or credibility in the future. Basically, to totally blacken the guy's name, character assassinate him.
Yeah, look, I can see that point, and I can understand it, particularly those of us who've followed the IICA, I always get that wrong, the Independent Inquiry into Child Sex Abuse, those of us that have followed that, the allegations about a VIP paedophile ring in Westminster, and those of us that are screaming bloody blue murder, that if it's good enough for Andrew to be hauled over the coals for his knowledge of Jeffrey Epstein, what the bloody hell is there to be said about Prince Charles, the heir to the throne, the avowed best friend of Jimmy Savile, the record-breaking paedophile? I'm not, you know, stretching the imagination here when I say, how in the name of Christ, if it's okay for Andrew to be interviewed under caution, why not Prince Charles then, Tony?
Well, I think Prince Charles has probably got more better advisors and more PR savvy. You know, he's not going to go doing interviews about Jimmy Savile, where one wonders whether Andrew is such a twit that he would go and talk about almost anything. I think he seemed to think he was going to be able to wing it, that interview with Emily Maitlis, but he didn't. Certainly didn't come across in a very convincing manner. And of course, his first statement, I don't know how much he pays his PR advisor, but the first thing to say in an interview like that absolutely has got to be, about sympathy for the survivors and the victims of Epstein and Maxwell. And that he just didn't seem to occur to him that was an important thing to say. So, you know, anyway, I think at the end of the day, we've got to interrogate, you know, I'd like to see some British mass media journalists go over to Brazil and track Ghislaine down and find out what's happening with her and doorstep her. Maybe Roger Cook can be brought out for retirement.
Roger Cook, God be with the days. You see, you and I are about the same age. We remember Roger Cook. So tell me this, on her, she's obviously next for the hit parade, and I don't say that for a giggle. She must be. I mean, if Maxwell procured girls for Jeffrey Epstein, well, then she is beyond what we would call a material witness. She's an essential witness to crimes. You could argue that she's an accessory after the fact.
Well, she was one of the perpetrators.
Yeah.
Almost. Well, I mean, it's quite clear. She was one of, I mean, for example, what Virginia was saying is Ghislaine was proposing to her that she wanted to own her child, that she was going to pay her $120,000 a year as a retainer, and she was going to have a child for Ghislaine, which Ghislaine would own. In a legal agreement. And of course, one knows exactly what that child would have been used for, whatever sex it was. It certainly would not have had any kind of normal, sensible existence. And that was the trigger that led to Virginia
Antonio's just dropped out there, talking about Ghislaine Maxwell there, who's in South America at the moment, material witness, accessory after the fact. When it comes to her knowledge of what Jeffrey Epstein was doing, well, she was right there, front and center, providing Epstein with girls. And Prince Andrew acknowledged, didn't he, that he spoke with her when she was in London back in the late spring, early summer this year, That was only a couple of weeks after Epstein, after another investigation or a new investigation had been opened into Epstein. This is before Epstein committed suicide, allegedly. And she was in London. Andrew met her. A lot of speculation that one of the things he wanted to do was basically to kind of suss her out as to how the land was lying. What might be said about him. What could be said about him. What she was likely to say in the event she was picked up and questioned. Right, I can't get Tony. We're just about out of time anyway. So we'll move on. He's calling me back. Are you there?
I'm here.
I was desperately trying to get you back there because we've only got about 3 minutes left anyway. Just to finish right. That thought about Ghislaine Maxwell and what might happen to her, what might not happen to her.
I think she will disappear. I think, you know, the intelligence services have got the very, very easy. Give her a new identity, a new name, a new passport. You know, she'll put a wig on, whatever, disappear. And that's what they do with people like this. We're supposed to forget about her. She's not, you know, someone who's important. The same with Jean-Luc Brunel. These people are serious child sex offenders, but they are under protection. It might even be that they are quietly dispatched somewhere so they can't come back and make a fuss about it. And this, of course, is one of the main things. Anyone that's involved in these major crimes themselves has got to watch out, you know, because what happened to Jeffrey Epstein could possibly happen to Ghislaine Maxwell as well. And that's part of the dangerous game that they're playing. But, I mean, the main problem here is that, with Epstein particularly, is that we had a whole load of evidence in the US, but the justice system simply didn't deliver in the same way as the justice system in Britain has not delivered for the victims of child sexual abuse by the VI paedophiles, and that's all been kicked into the long grass. And it didn't for the Savile generation, and it hasn't, for example, for the survivors and the victims of Grenfell Tower. That's still, there's no one has been actually prosecuted under corporate manslaughter laws or any health and safety laws or anything for that. They haven't apparently even been arrested. So, I mean, our entire judicial system needs a total overhaul, and we need to have some sort of transparency about the way these high court judges and Supreme Court judges are appointed. But, you know, because all it seems to me that they're doing at the moment is just protecting the establishment. And, you know, if you haven't got a functioning judiciary, I'm afraid it's just a slippery slope down to potentially anything up to civil war. You know, where is this going to end? If you have increasing disharmony and proportional amounts of wealth with, you know, more and more people having to fight like crazy just to survive and a tiny elite. Well, I don't know, you know, where is the country going? You have to have a justice system in that sort of situation. Otherwise, it really will get brutal. And we've got this crazy general election coming along. I don't know if I'm allowed to say anything about that because you've got either 5 years of Tory and Boris or you've got this kind of Jeremy Corbyn attitude, which is where he doesn't really quite know what he wants to do. And so the voters have really been almost checkmated by the system. So there's almost nothing that they can vote for if they want to make it for a better Britain. I mean, everyone is being apparently persuaded to vote on the Brexit issue, and it would be wonderful to get this all sorted out. But then we've got to have some social justice too, and you've got to choose between the two. Why haven't we got a party that will deliver the result of the referendum and social justice? So, you know,
I'll tell you what we'll do, because we're just about out of time now. I wanted you to come on the week of the election anyway, one or two days before the 12th. And then on the Friday, I'm going to be doing, unusually because I don't work on Friday, but I'm going to be doing a special program in the afternoon, just reflecting on the results. So I'd be inviting you to participate in that anyway, Tony. So we should do that. We're just about out of time now anyway. I've got to get ready for my next guest. Tony's program, if you haven't heard it, and I know you have, the politics show thisweek.org.uk on BCFM in Bristol is an excellent program. Very few programs like it anyway.
I'll give you a little quick tip about what we're doing tomorrow.
Do me.
And that is we're looking more at the Hitler's secretary Martin Bormann's role in the Holocaust. So we've been told that the main perpetrators were Himmler, were Eichmann, and Heydrich. Actually, Bormann this guy I've been following the last couple of years really had an immensely important role in the, what was effectively the extermination of the rabbinic tradition right across Europe. And, you know, this was an immensely important event, which has been trivialised by these anti-Semitism smears that we've seen to do with the Labour Party. And this is, you know, this is the worst thing about this, is when this is trivialised, and that is what I've seen happening. It's just not, simply not accurate. Things like Ken Livingstone being spun out for simply stating historical facts about the agreement between the Zionists and the Nazis. So we'll be doing a bit more on the real perpetrators of the Holocaust and the real anti-Semites, you know, wiping out rabbinic Jews and the synagogue. People have been taught in the synagogues across Europe tomorrow.
Must listen as usual, mate. Thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate it, Tony. Thanks for your patience this week as well. Cheers. Tony Gosling live on the line from Devon today, thisweek.org.uk, to find out about the politics show. Sounds like a fascinating program this week about Borman and the Holocaust. Fascinating stuff. Right, we've got to move on.